My name's Helen Petman, and I'm the chair of Friends of Evington, which is a charity that we set up quite a long time ago, and then have refigured recently. It was set up in 2000. Sorry,
And what kind of activities?
2012.
And what kind of activities does it do?
Well, we've got two major projects. One is the Evington Echo, which has we've taken it under our umbrella now, but it has been going for over 40 years. And that is a community newspaper that goes out at least six times a year. It's more like a magazine, really. And does quite a lot of informing of what's going on. And the other project is Evington in Bloom. And that is a project where we try to enhance the area with plants and get community involvement.
And what are we going to be looking at this morning in our little ramble?
Well, this morning I'm going to take you around the conservation area, and you'll be able to talk about different things that we see on the route and about the history of the area. We're now standing on the east side of the Evington Conservation Area, and the house across the road is included now, newly included in the area, because it marks the boundary, and it's an interesting new building which has got features that make it look like a boat.
Just describe it a little bit from what you can see.
Yes. It's got bits that jut out that look boat-like on both sides, and getting the angle right, you can really see that how the architect thought of it and designed it as a modern building, and I expect it's really nice inside too.
And as the character, so just explain what a conservation area is. Yeah.
A conservation area is an area that has been identified that is of special historical interest, and it has to meet certain criteria and look good, and that is why we've worked with the conservation officer to do a patch walk around the area. A patch walk is when the councillors approve that it is necessary to do the patch walk.
And what kind of things on the patch walk are you looking for?
On the patch walk, we were looking for things like dirty signs and road markings and white loose wires and a lot of broken down things that we saw that could be put right and enhance the area substantially. And it does need to be a cooperation, because our Evington in Bloom project couldn't possibly cope with the amount of things that actually do need to be put right.
So just explain to us why a new building is part of the conservation area. It's not just about preservation of the older buildings.
No, it's of particular interest for the mixed buildings that we've got here, that go from medieval right up to the modern day, and it's just showing the changes as well, which is always of interest. We've just walked about 20 metres towards the village of Evington, and we're stopping at a sign that said, "Welcome to Shady Lane Arboretum, School Lane, Spinney." And if you walk into this spinney, it doesn't take very long to feel that from an urban area you're right in the middle of the countryside. And but sadly, when we look at it, we could also see very dirty, worn out signs. One pointing visitors to a route to St. Denis Church, and the other one is a sign, a dirty sign that says it says the Woodland Habitat, but you can hardly read it.
And just as we've been stood here, there's a lot of heavy lorries going past. How does that affect the area?
Yes, it is a very much a cut-through area, and it is sad to see that people just drive through and don't stop and enjoy some of the features that it has got. And if we walk on a little bit, when the aeroplane stops, it's only another 20 metres and you can hear the bird songs. Well, this is where within a 50 metres we've walked into the Shady Lane Arboretum, this woodland area, and you can now hear all the bird songs, and it feels a lot calmer here than with all the heavy traffic on Main Street that we were in.
And the trick is to come out at 5 o'clock in the morning and listen to the morning chorus at the moment.
Yes, it will be good here.
So what are the features, when somebody, if you're advising somebody to come and visit Evington, what would you say that they should look out for?
Well, I think Evington has got so much potential with the beautiful trees. It was once a big estate, and the estate was much bigger than Evington Park. And as you go round, you can see some beautiful mature trees. And you can almost say, come to Evington to view the trees. And there are some tree walks that are around that are highlighted as well.
Because calling a copse or a woodland an arboretum implies that it's been...
Yes.
Looked after,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, this is just part of a much bigger arboretum that had a lot to do with David Attenborough and was set up in the 1970s. And when they set it up, they had areas of different trees, and and then people sponsored the trees. But I understand that it's been full for sponsorship for quite a long time now. And it's looked after by Park Services. But also as part of it, there's a moated site called Piggy's Hollow. And that's because in the Victorian times, there was a farmer that the children nicknamed Piggy Wilson, because he used to smear manure over the side of the moat that's there in order to discourage them from playing. And but the moat is quite amazing, because it's one of the best preserved moated sites in Leicestershire. And it would have had a manor house on it at some stage, but it hasn't been properly identified as to where the manor house would have been. But you can see a lot of the excavation and features, and half of Piggy's Hollow is managed by the council, and the other half is managed by one of our volunteers who cuts it down every year and takes the scrapings off, so that it is a place for biodiversity and is one of the special features of Evington. We're standing on one side of Piggy's Hollow, but it's quite difficult to see what's happening here because it's getting very overgrown with brambles. But further out, there are dips where they would have been fish ponds as part of the whole site of the moated site.
And just describe it for us and I mean, we're in a glorious May morning.
Yeah.
So let's take a moment to kind of appreciate how everything's looking, and it looks fantastic, doesn't it?
Yes, the leaves are coming well on the trees, and it is bright, and you can hear the birds tweeting, and it's quiet here. This is the side of Piggy's Hollow, where you can clearly see the moat. And it's quite a deep moat, and this area is looked after by a volunteer who's supported by other volunteers and keeps this area looked after for biodiversity as well.
I was going to ask, was one of the purposes of Friends of Evington is to encourage environmental stewardship?
Yes.
And so what's changed in recent years about how we manage places like this to encourage biodiversity?
In the past, there was a paid leader, who got people together, and we used to come under his authority to look after this side of the moat. So at that stage, a lot of scrub was removed, but then I suppose with council cuts and everything, it would have degenerated if it hadn't been looked after by volunteers. And if we walk on a little bit, we can see a notice that's been put up.
Just say a little bit about why that encouragement for biodiversity and haven spaces for insects and wildflowers to flourish. Why is that important?
Well, a while back, Bug Life came to Leicester, and he taught a lot of the officers about biodiversity and looking after the environment for the benefit of the insects and other pollinating insects that he says are vital. And they even say that if all the humans were to be suddenly, and animals and mammals were suddenly to go, it wouldn't make as much difference as if all the insects and other pollinated plants went.
So when some people complain that things like grass verges aren't kept and maintained and cut five times a year, and they're only cut once a year now, what's the reason for that?
The reason is that we can look, the City Council have actually got a very good policy for grassland management, and there's six different types of management that can happen. And the management that we're looking at along verges in particular is what's called horticultural verges, where we are encouraging plants to grow that will do well in that area. It's not a meadow because the soil is often too rich to be a meadow. Here, it is more like it isn't using plants that you might find in a garden here. It is all what you might call wildflowers, but they are able to thrive here because. Usually in January, the volunteers will come and they'll cut it all down, and then they scrape it all off and have piles that they scrape off, and that keeps it going, because there's no even wildlife area that now will be good enough to carry on without some sort of intervention. As we're walking on out of Piggy's Hollow, we go into the main area of the Arboretum, which was established in the early 1970s. You can see a great variety of trees here, and it's a big expansive area. And now, as we walk along, we can really hear the birdsong.
Now, Helen, when we talk about conservation, we often just think of things and what they look like, not what they sound like. Is there a way that we should think about conservation in terms of sounds as well as pictures?
Yes. It's a simple answer.
What would you, have you noticed any shifts and changes about how things sound that you recall from the past, which you think you kind of would be a shame if we lost, or, you know, we have lost, that you kind of think fondly of?
Yes, I mean, in terms of people, it's always nice to look back, have recordings of their voices and know who they were and how you were associated. That's another way of looking at the past. And also looking at the different sounds that you might hear. When we were in the village, we could hear all the traffic sounds, and now we can hear the bird sounds.
Well, we're living in a period of transition from diesel buses to electric buses here in Leicester. And that means there's a very, you know, there's going to be a generation that grows up in a few years' time. They'll never have heard a diesel bus.
Yes. So we've recorded that as well.
Yeah. So it's, sometimes it's the things that you kind of don't intend to capture, but you capture by accident as well, that shape the image.
Yes. So, it's nice to do this walk because it will be of historical interest later on if it's kept.
Now, tell us a little bit about how you report about this in the Evington Echo.
We do lots of small articles, which we might say give a bit of history on the various places that we're at the minute. And as we walk on, there'll be other buildings that will be of interest, as well as open field.
And do you find people there's a desire within the readers of the Evington Echo to find out more about particular buildings and the history that's associated with spaces and places in the area?
I just have to carry on saying, helping get the message out, and hope it sticks. We're now in the middle of the Arboretum and looking down at all the trees, and we can get, because some of the lower branches have been pruned, we get a really nice vista right down. And it's often written about and said that this is a hidden treasure for Evington.
And it's often described, when you see a scene like this, which is the trees have created a green translucent canopy as the light comes through, and it kind of dapples on the floor, and there's flowers and things growing through from the undergrowth on the ground. But it's like it's kind of almost like it's a cathedral. You can kind of get quite romantic, can't you, with your kind of Tolkien-esque type descriptions.
Yes. It is lovely just to be here. And just further along, there's a bench where you can sit and meditate.
And with your knowledge of English literature and history, how important is things like dells, and, you know, what's the mythical side? Are there any myths associated with this, of kind of fairies or pixies, or, you know, what's the kind of the mythology of a place like this?
I have come across a few books that have been written based with somebody living in Evington, and have dealt with the mythology, and that has done book reviews in the Evington Echo. But I don't know anything specifically associated with this area.
Well, maybe we can start there. Ghost stories from Evington.
We've just now walked out of the Shady Lane Arboretum onto a road called Shady Lane. And this, just off Shady Lane, before it was an arboretum, there was a Second World War camp, and first of all, it was an American camp, and the Jerrys used to come here, and they were quite free in the war, wandering around. But when they went, then they had to improve the camp to make it a prisoner of war camp. And then there were Germans and Italians in the prisoner of war camp here. And I was always surprised to read how free they were to wander around. And some of them, we've done reports about this, were actually stayed in Evington and married into Evington, married Evington women.
And you've celebrated, Friends of Evington hosted an event for VE Day. What happened on that occasion?
Oh, on that occasion, we were based not here, but in the village of Evington, and we advertised it as a VE Day to come and celebrate, and then the shops joined in, the councillor helped, lots of the Knit and Natter group came along and did loads of nice decorations. And we had a wonderful time with food that was either brought along or could be bought at the cafe. There was music and just a jolly time for everybody. And everybody said how wonderful it was to feel that we could do these things in spite of the awful losses that we've suffered in Evington with the closure of a pharmacy, a post office, and a doctor surgery, and now no cash till at all in the village. That has made it feel like it's not going anywhere, and that we will just have to put up with all the grot mess that we've got, and people won't know that we have got these lovely areas as well.
Just almost a philosophical question: why does a sense of place matter?
Because it's where we live, and we just want it to look as good as it can be. So we'll, as Friends of Evington, we'll cooperate with anybody who's on the same wavelength.
But that is driven by a sense of identification with a place rather than other things that people can identify with, like faith and football teams and lots of other things. Why place? What is there about having a specific place to identify with?
It brings us all together, regardless of our different religious beliefs or non-beliefs. And it's something that worked when we all got together, because we were the people that came along all wanted this place to be good for them, because they live here and it's their sense of place too, not just ours. We've now walked into the churchyard at St. Denis Church, which is the parish centre here, and as we're looking ahead, we can see a modern attachment, which was 2013, which is the parish centre. And that is a centre that is open for bookings from anyone in the area or out of the area even. And we at the minute, we have a lunch club there every Wednesday, and particularly like to help people who might identify as a lonely.
Do you know what the history of the church itself is and when it was first built?
Yes, well, I have my own theory that there was a Saxon church here that was then pulled down, and when with the Norman Conquest, which was a disaster for the Saxons, and that they wanted to get rid of any remains of Saxon churches, so they built on top. And so the history does date back to 1213 or something like that, when the church was rebuilt by the Normans, and a lot of the Norman features can be seen, and also additions and everything, and it is a very interesting church. It's got World War II soldiers, particularly one soldier who's celebrated here, and a lot of other things that are of interest to parishioners.
What do you think life would have been like in Evington for a kind of average Saxon peasant?
I think they would have felt very upset at the takeover. It was a terrific takeover all over the country, and they would have felt powerless to do anything about it, and would have probably just had to agree that it was a takeover and that they had to accept that.
The new lords and masters.
Yes. There's a Hugh de Grandville who was given a lot of the land around here, much bigger than the area we've seen when we're looking at. And he was a Norman landlord, and he had a lot of hunting grounds, and if you were if you were hungry and you went and poached on his land, you could be in a lot of trouble. There was no leniency because you were hungry.
And there was no local shops that you could go and visit to. You had to make everything yourself.
Yes. I mean, they would have been better off probably then, because it was when we had the enclosures later on, and that was in the early 14th century, that things were dire for ordinary people, because they would have had land that they could have grown their own crops on still, even with the Norman conquest.
And I suppose we're still feeling the effects of some of those things even today, with things like language. And there's a James Hawes's book about the history of England,
yeah,
and the split between the Norman South and the Saxon North, yeah, and the Celtic East North and yeah, Scotland, and the way that we use language and, you know, say things in an Anglo-Saxon way and it's quite blunt, and say it in a Norman way and he's got eyes at the end of it, those kind of things.
Yeah. In the past, we've had a whole series of vicars, and now we haven't got a vicar or a curate anymore, and it's being run by church wardens as volunteer-run thing in the church. And so they do need to encourage the people to come and use the parish centre, which is separate from the Church of England. It is a local thing.
And that role of the vicar within the community, when I was growing up, it was quite a strong...
Oh, yes. He was a very strong vicar that we lost. He's gone to Chester now, as Dean of Chester Cathedral, which is a more prestigious job for him. But he was very keen on working with the local community and the different faiths and faith groups and trying to bring them together. And I was quite impressed because he actually wrote an ethical programme that wasn't based on what you believe. It was based on what he thought were good ethical practices. And I got a lot of time for people in the Church of England who are not hypocrites.
So where are we looking at?
We're now on Church Road, which is one of the roads that surrounds the village green. It's not really a village green because it's all hedged round. It used to be called the recreation ground. And we're looking across the road at the village hall, which was built by public subscription with a very good benefactor who was an industrialist called John Fair. And I hadn't realised how much these industrialists have actually contributed to making the place better. And it was built in 1913 for the benefit of the community, and now it's run by a trust that let it out at very reasonable charges for community use.
So let's summarise what we've been talking about. If you were explaining to people in another part of Leicester or beyond Leicester what the benefit is of supporting and developing a conservation area and an environmental plan that goes with that, what would be your kind of main recommendations?
To just go with what you think is the right thing to be doing, and not to prejudge people just because they work for the council or because of their religious beliefs or anything, but to find out for yourself what these people are like and what they believe about looking after a local area.
And what would you recommend about the building up a sense of what that history and heritage and awareness and knowledge is? Where would you start with there?
Often it's we've done it through obituaries in the Ovington Echo of people who have contributed an awful lot. And for example, in the next issue, Doreen Morton has got her obituary, and she was key to getting things going with getting a grant for the village hall to refurbish it and making all the curtains herself, and did an awful lot.
I suppose the danger is that we take for granted a lot of the work that people do to maintain the build. So the heritage and conservation isn't just about the buildings themselves. We should be celebrating and commemorating the people and the efforts of the people who brought this together.
Yes, that's quite right. Because we often talk about, and there's little booklets about how it all started, but without keeping on saying about the local people and what they have done and are doing. And I always think it's a bit sad when it has to be written as an obituary. And people have often said to me, I really find the obituaries interesting, but isn't it a pity it wasn't done before they died?
Maybe we should start a community awards.
Yes.
Another task for Friends of Ovington.
Yes, to commemorate the amount of work people put in that has helped keep the area a little bit better. But it's just pockets, because we really do need to get some of these, the look of the area better as well. Something we need to work as much as we can with the conservation people to do that.
Last question, where can people find more information about the Ovington Echo and Friends of Ovington?
They can go online at ovingtonecho.uk, and there is a way you can search for past issues as well as the current issue, which is on the front page.